This Sunday on the International Connection.
News that stays news. Hard-hitting journalism.
I'd like to titillate the nerves there.
Yeah, Mike, what do you think of the rave reviews my show's getting?
Your show, Bob?
Why use the word Bob?
Mike Dyer and J.R. Bob Dobbs.
Sunday, 8:30 a.m.
88.1 CKLN.
With Bob.
Next, the International
Connection
in color.
Bob.
Bob.
Yes.
Well, Bob, welcome on board.
CKLN FM 88.1. Always testing the waters. Your first alternative community radio station in Toronto.
You do some stuff, you talk to Frank Zappa, at least J.R. Bob Dobbs does. I don't know about the other folks on the end of this answering machine, but I'm wondering about your affiliations with Jello Biafra or Devo, if you do any consulting, because I know they get the poop on some of these experiments, you know, and I don't really have a DNA question for you, but being a narcissist, I'm kind of wondering if there's any way that they can duplicate me, because I got a lot of work to do, and I wouldn't mind sharing it with myself. So if you can chew on that a little bit, and maybe let me know what you think. Goodbye. Goodbye.
My name is Day Johnston, Day Johnston, can't even spell my own name, and I heard you last night on Brave New Waves, repeated out of a States. I want to order your Bob Dawson's tapes. My address is down Kentucky, that's KY, zip is 4. Let me hear something, thanks.
Hey!
Yes?
Hey, you're talking to Bob.
Oh, brother, I...
Toronto Star, November 16th. The city of North York is considering removing the numeral 4 from all street numbers in the city because of, quote, the Chinese superstition that the number 4 brings bad luck. So, Bob, freedom is the freedom to say 2 plus 2 equals 22.
Hello. This is Brother Charles. I want to take this opportunity to welcome you to the awareness of equality consciousness. This is a welcome based on the truthful premise
that we are all but the play of one energy, one conscious energy, one consciousness. And in this reality, we are all equal, all brothers and sisters in this transformative, growthful process of life itself. So it is as a brother that I welcome you to the world of synchronicity.
Good morning. It's 6:59 in the morning here, Bob, and I've got the word, because if you're not up, you may want to get up, because last night on Twin Peaks, it was revealed Bob is afraid of one man, and that one man's name is Mike. Talk to you in two. Bye.
Bob, it's Sunday night, a little after 10 o'clock. I just got back from Guelph about half an hour ago. Put in the tape of last night's Twin Peaks episode. Get to the first real part of the show. And the excerpt from Laura's diary, February 22nd, which I believe, Bob, is your birthday, isn't it? And, Bob, either you and David Lynch have to get together. Something's going on here. And I surrender, Bob. That's it. I surrender. Not that you win, and not that I lose. I just surrender. Hope all's well. Bye-bye.
Carolyn, it's Julie. I was just flipping through the Star Week TV guide and I came across a letter in the Dear Editor section. It's quite a neat letter. It's just explaining the fact that Twin Peaks is just too real and too good for people to appreciate. I'll just read the last two paragraphs. The most disturbing habit of David Lynch is that he takes that mirror on reality and tilts it just enough to show us part of ourselves we weren't too keen on seeing in the first place. It's no wonder Twin Peaks remains at the bottom of the ratings in the States. I'm convinced the show is too good for North American tastes and will leave us shortly. If viewers could just outgrow their juvenile diet of mysteries solved within 60 minutes, maybe a show like Twin Peaks would stick around a while. Yeah, pretty good, huh? See you later.
Hi, just a few questions to ponder in the holiday season. Number one, why is Madonna the most famous person in the world? Number two, what exactly does BYOB stand for? Let's talk about this silent Y. Bye-bye.
I wasn't ready. You know what's going to happen at some point. We'll just come into the studio every Wednesday at midnight. We'll put a tape in. You and I will sit and talk. We'll have 2 hours of tape messages.
Yeah, I guess that's when the schools close and the students take over. And then we'd have votes on which was the most important message and become Bobby of the Week. Something like that, eh? BYOB, bring your own Bob.
Yeah,
the tape messages.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
No, we can talk about that later. Mike, do you have anything pressing?
No, nothing pressing. Nothing pressing. Just fighting this cold, but it's good to be here. Has it been 2 weeks already?
Yeah. That reminds us, we'll be back next week.
Yes, yeah.
Christmas show next week, for those who are interested. And then...
Taking Boxing Day off.
Yeah, then I won't be back till January 9th.
Okay.
So 3 week space. So we got 2 shows coming up, and so we can continue from tonight till next week right into it.
Back to back.
If we didn't finish tonight.
Okay.
Any calls yet?
Yeah, we got a call right away. I mean, do we go right away, or do you want to set things up?
I got to set one thing up. But maybe if it's a call, let's not take the call. Let's ask him to hold it. Let's
so
just get
if you wouldn't mind, as you know, we do take calls on the Church of the Subject of the Show, but maybe wait for a few minutes.
Yeah, just 5 minutes. I do have a couple things. Today's December 12th, 1990, so that's 12-12-90. 12 times 12 is 144, and the old biblical elite number, the elect, was 144,000. So what's significant about that? The fact is that finally it's official. The Doctors for Bob Institute sign is up on St. Clair Avenue. Go by. Get your chakras warmed by the wonderful color of that sign. Wonderful sign. Doctors for Bob Institute is now ready for media coverage. We've got the visual space. We've got that visual semiotic sign to refer to for a reference point, right? So that happened today. Also, the other point was last weekend, Tom Rich came back from San Francisco with a conference of... subsidiary of a holy office, and much pink secret council 10 subsidiary auxiliary people met there, and Tom Rich was kind enough to leave a memo on my desk on Monday, and I think we should go to that memo. And this was recorded while Tom was in Jet City.
Hello, Bob and listeners. This is Tom Rich on assignment. I am presently making my report to you, Bob, from United Airlines Flight 206, and I'm returning to Toronto from San Francisco. As I speak, I am on a GTE airphone, and we are over Lake Tahoe at 39,000 feet. I will keep the medium in mind during my report. This medium of airphone produces a very rough and static signal, so I apologize for any reception difficulties. Bob, I had the opportunity of meeting with many intellectuals in San Francisco last night at a party held in my honor. Many dignitaries were present, such as the Consul General of Canada, the ex-governor of California, Jerry Brown, top-level bankers, blue bloods, as well as artists such as Are You Serious and the publisher of Mondo 2000, Allison Kennedy. I made them aware of my being an associate of yours and found to my delight that your reputation as the greatest artist alive today preceded both me and you. They were most aware of your work and anxious to have more input from you, as well as to open up a dialogue so that they can have more understanding of the world around them. In particular, Bob, Mary McLuhan, the daughter of Marcia McLuhan, the great guru of our time, who was also present and who was the host of the party, was so impressed by your CBC interview that she can't wait to meet with you and wants you to replace Larry King on the CNN network. So, in conclusion, Bob, I want to summarize and say that from being down here in San Francisco last night, thanks to you, a great earthquake was released, and your work, which created the earthquake, obviously is extremely important to everyone down here and to everyone of our generation, as well as all those who are interested in learning and in awareness of the world around us. This is Tom Rich reporting to Bob Dobbs, and we'll see you soon. Over and out.
Okay.
All right. Should we take a call? Is it still there?
No.
They're not very patient sometimes.
Well, we told them to go away and to come back later. So
oh, okay.
It's our doing.
All right.
That's an impressive message from Tom.
It's
you're reaching that audience out there. And it's ironic, of course, now that we're under, you know, legal scrutiny from the church in Dallas, that we're cutting into their territory. We're cutting into their territory with the show now syndicated in several states in the U.S.
Yes. Well, it's all true what Tom said, and the Mondo 2000 boys, Are You Serious, and Jazz Morgan and Allison Kennedy, the publisher, were shocked when Tom Rich walked up and handed him Jerry Belanger's article, The Greatest Artist Alive Today, which he's negotiating with them to publish in a future issue.
Well, they initially refused, didn't they?
No, they just didn't know whether they could dare
it
do it.
Fit in.
Yeah, they didn't think it would fit in a new issue. But the next issue, probably after Tom Rich's fine PR work, I think that it will be put in, because when Tom Rich handed him the article, both of them, he said, this person flashed the cover. They go, Bob Dobbs. Then Tom continued, this person wants you to read these. And then he handed some perfect pictures. And then Allison Kennedy stayed long enough to hear the CBC interview, and she would tell him, Are You Serious, to pick up his attention span and stop delaying. Jazz Morgan was right. Get Bob in there. We got a call?
Yeah, I have two things to say, though. First of all, that the numbers here are 595-1655, 595-1478, or 79. The other thing, too, is in the other booth, there is a message to encourage people who haven't paid their pledges yet to do so following fundraising. I think we've had about 55% of our return, but we need a higher return than that. So just to remind you, for those of you who haven't paid, I'm sure all the subgenii pledges have paid.
They have.
I'm sure they have. So let's go to our call. Hello, CKLN.
Yeah, hi, Bob. It's Tom.
Oh, you have an addendum, Tom?
Yeah, I just wanted to thank you for claiming my report.
Fine report. Fine work, Tom.
And it was very interesting getting down there and finding out that, I think I said on the report, I said proceeded, I meant preceded.
Yeah.
That your reputation preceded both me and you. And it was very interesting meeting with these people who, California is supposed to be ahead of us, and yet what's interesting is that center margin theory, we're here out on the margins, and it gives us a better point at which to view what's going on than being in the center. And certainly the work that's being done here in Toronto, even though we Canadians have this feeling that we're kind of irrelevant or Hamish or Mickey Mouse, there really is a tremendous amount of awareness here connected with Club 22. And it's interesting to take it down to California and see whether or not we're just reading our press clippings or is there some validity in what we're saying. And, of course, it came back strongly that there's tremendous validity. Tonight I got a call from a guy who was at the party I won't mention any names, but he's the president of Pacific Bell, which is a pretty large company. And I had told him that the Beatles were a major military operation and described it as and described how Elvis Presley with Colonel Parker was sort of the prelude to the Beatles from a military operation standpoint. And he told me, his initial impression was exactly what I thought. He said, oh, that's crazy. He called back Mary yesterday and said that he picked up the Sgt. Pepper album, and He said it hit him. He could see. He could really see it. He could really understand the cultural paradigm shift that had been created. And he couldn't believe that he could see it and it was true. He could really get a handle on it. And he called me tonight. I didn't have a time to tell you before you left. But he called me and he was ecstatic over this insight. But I wanted to just not take a lot of time because I know there's other people who are calling. And I just wanted to read one thing. I just wanted to read this thing from the McLuhan office. It's coming up after 10 years since the death of Marshall McLuhan. And this is a big milestone. And I just wanted to read this. It's called, entitled, Uh-Oh, McLuhan is Right. It won't take long, Rob.
Go ahead. No problem.
Tom Wolfe was very worried whether Marshall McLuhan was right or not. Could TV destroy our American empire just as the phonetic alphabet in its heyday destroyed the empire of Greece? McLuhan believed that unless combated, the action of rapid technological change in our culture could usher in a new dark age of violence and decay. McLuhan has now been dead for 10 years. Judging from the events of the past 10 years, he is still way ahead of the world. His ideas on media ecology and the fostering of peace in a troubled world have yet to be understood or initiated. His forecasts and projections are still batting a thousand as we reflect upon the war and peace in the global theater. Meanwhile, the Gutenberg galaxy has speeded itself up to the point where culture is our business and understanding media disappeared as we went through the vanishing point. The new Europe has proven that cliché becomes archetype when people apply the laws of the media. Meanwhile, North America today has dropped out and is merely using the medium as a massage. And I think that's the statement, and of course it's surrounded by Joyce quotes, which I won't mention other than to say that there's one quote here from James Joyce, Finnegan's Wake, page 169, which sort of describes the introduction to your show with the different callers. Putting truth and untruth together, a shot may be made at what this hybrid actually was like to look at.
Tom,
so unless you have anything else, I think I'll just leave it to you two. And thanks, Mike.
Hey, Tom.
Thanks. Yeah.
This thing you read, did you present that to the people at Mary's party?
Yes, it was. As a matter of fact, it was. I put it together and on the spur of the moment, so to speak, with and wrapped it up, and on the side put seasoned greetings.
Right, so it was wrapped like a present?
Yeah, like a scroll.
How many people did you give it to?
About 50.
Ooh, so who did the wrapping?
One of the help out there.
Yeah, you were in that zone.
One of the help of the blue blood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Tom, we'll lay back for a while. We've got a few more things. I'm feeling passive tonight for a while. I got a couple more things to say. Once we get into the fight, maybe you can call back in.
Well, keep up the good work, Bob. Maybe next week we can talk a little bit more about this 10-year anniversary coming up.
Right, but stay in if you can, and you might want to get back into the fray later.
All right, I'll hang on.
But I think that manifesto will feed the callers some percepts.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Okay, unless there's no other call, I got something to say, Mike.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, the first caller, first message was from James B., and he was pleading for Bob Marshall to go down to the Beehive. And apparently Bob Marshall went down, but the results of that really angered me. Apparently Bob Marshall got up on stage when he received his Golden Turkey Award, the Toronto Original Award, and he proceeded to explain that not many people would know who he was because he hadn't been on the Toronto media for 3.5 years, and he blamed two people. He blamed former station manager of CKLN for getting rid of him, and he also blamed me, Bob Dobbs. He claimed that I hijacked his tenure, his time rationing at CKLN, and has moved into this scenario, and everybody's forgotten the relevance of his work. Well, that's why Bob Marshall was put aside. He just is irresponsible. You give him some media coverage, he just gets personal, takes out vengeance on people. You know what I mean? He can't stand it when he has to do some media ecology. So, Bob Marshall, if you're listening, Mike has this to say for you.
Station managers may come and go, but there will always be Bob.
Okay, Bobby. So, that's
hope what... Hope you're listening tonight, Bob.
Yeah, so, Bobby Marshall, we hope you get another reward, an award or something, mm-hmm. so that you can maybe change your image, change your approach to life. You just don't seem to have a handle on the new etiquette required in the 90s.
Now let me ask you this question, Bob. Do you think that with the upcoming management changes here at CKLN, there will be any difficult times for you or the program ahead?
Well, we know I own the station bike, so I don't foresee much trouble. Mm-hmm. Even if there was an accidental replacement that did not have potential perceived slack, I know that we could privately persuade that person to understand at least the value of your work, and then I can always be a guest. So I've got no fears on any new people coming in.
We've got a phone call. Let's go to the lines. Hello?
Hello?
Hello.
Hello, yes, am I on?
Hi, yeah.
Oh, well, hello, this is Dylan Jay here. I'm calling, I listen to you quite often.
Oh, thanks.
So, anyway, I wanted to say that right now, I just wanted to make a quick announcement for you. That there's supposed to be a conference that's going to be taking place. You know about this. It's a conference against the Middle East war. That's going to be in Chicago. Did you hear about this?
No.
Please. You didn't hear?
No, a conference to...
I can barely hear you, I'm afraid.
Well, you got to get your radio up?
Anyway, so...
Tell him to put his radio up. Yeah. You can tell him on the phone, Mike.
Hello?
Hi, do you want to put your radio up a little bit?
That's fine.
Is your radio on? Maybe he's listening to the wrong station. Maybe he's listening to CIUT.
Maybe Scott could outside pick up the phone.
That's
okay. That's all right? Okay, well, wait till he walks back to the radio.
You hang up.
Well, Dylan, listen, you gotta listen to your radio as you're talking on the phone. I'm not in your earpiece, so call back if you haven't got that figured out. You have your radio volume up. No, I didn't have anything to do with this conference, but he does bring up something that I'd like to give out. I have a profile here. Do we have a caller?
No.
We're okay. I have a profile of the Anglo-American oil companies who perhaps are very influential in the present Gulf crisis. So I thought over the next few months, as we move into wartime, wartime waits for no man. So we move into wartime on a hardware level, but, you know, certainly controlled by the software agents. Just want to suggest that as I list off the characters who run the various oil companies, and we go but tick off the names one by one through the next couple of months, we can energize our response and send perceptual feed forward with the consequences of their actions in mind at these particular individuals. But in case this is Dylan, mm-hmm. let's do that in a second.
Hey, you want to go through it now?
Yeah.
Okay, I will try a different method this time. Hello? Hello? Hi, Sikela. Out there? Are you there? You're not there, either. Hello? You can hear me. I can't hear you. Hello?
Caller?
Hello?
Why don't you pick up the phone and even get him to him directly?
I don't know. Hello?
Hey, he's there.
Yeah, we lost him again.
Okay. Okay, Dylan. We're waiting for you. All right, so the way to introduce this... to set up our meditation. The most powerful economic cartel in the world today is that controlled by the six Anglo-American petroleum multinationals. These six companies, Royal Dutch Shell, British Petroleum, Exxon, Chevron, Mobil, and Texaco, control 8% of all oil sold and transported internationally. Among them, they have divided world markets, apportioned shares thereof, and fixed prices under their long-standing arrangement since the Acna-Kerry Agreement of 1928. 1928 was brought up last show. Somebody was talking about the Knights Templar, and the Grand Orient was disbanded in Spain in 1928, and then the Opus Dei was begun in Spain. So also that year you had the Acna-Kerry Agreement. To continue, through the six oil companies' domination of oil exploration technology and worldwide concession agreements for petroleum extraction rights, they've put a vice grip on the available world oil supply. Behind these powerful companies stand the most influential British and American financial and political interests. Their monopoly has never effectively been challenged by governments, least of all by Washington or London. We have a caller? Okay, so the first company we should pay attention to here is the Royal Dutch Shell. By all informed accounts, the most influential of the companies is the British Dutch giant Royal Dutch Shell. The Shell Group, with gross worldwide sales last year of more than $106 billion, even before the huge windfall they will reap from the August 1990 Gulf crisis, is today the largest of the six oil multinationals, having surpassed Exxon in the past several years. Based on market value of its stock shares, the Royal Dutch Shell Group is the fourth largest corporation in the world. Only IBM, NTT, and the Industrial Bank of Japan rank larger. but sheer size does not account for the power and influence of this centerpiece of Britain's political and financial establishment. Shell today is inextricably interlinked with the highest levels of the British Foreign Office, the Bank of England, and the City of London financial establishment. Among those on the board of Shell directors are Lord Armstrong of Ilminster, formerly Robert Temple. I wonder if there's a Templar relationship there. Robert Bob Temple. That's like a Knight Templar, right? Probably a fake original name. Anyways, he's now Lord Armstrong of Ilminster. Lord Armstrong, a career civil servant, was the private secretary to the Prime Minister from 1970 to 75, the crucial period during which Anglo-American interests planned the 1973-74 oil shock. He was also private secretary to Prime Minister Harold Wilson during his second government in 1975. Lord Armstrong is a director of N.M. Rothschild & Sons and of the world's largest mining conglomerate, Rio Tinto Zinc. Any calls, Mike? Okay. The next character of Royal Dutch Shell is Sir Robert Clark. From 1975 to 1985, Clark served as a director of the Bank of England at the same time as he was chairman of the Hill Samuel Merchant Bank. Third man, Sir Michael Palliser. Head of the British Diplomatic Service, 1975 to 1982, Palliser, a leading member of key Anglo-American policy organs, including the Trilateral Commission and Bilderberg Group, is also deputy chairman of Britain's Midland Bank and director of Eagle Star Insurance and British American Tobacco, or BAT Industries.
I just want you to know you just broke my heart.
Sir David Orr, the next man, former chairman of Europe's largest food processing company, Unilever, another powerful Anglo-Dutch holding. Orr is also on the board of Rio Tinto Zinc. In recent years, the Shell Group has skillfully diversified its operations worldwide, including into Vietnam, Libya, Syria, China, and, of course, the UK North Sea. So that's the first of the six giants, Royal Dutch Shell. So let's send our slack to Lord Armstrong, Sir Robert Clark, Sir Michael Palliser, and Sir David Orr over the next while. We have a call, Mike. Okay.
But I wanted to say that right now...
Is it Dylan?
...there's going to be a very, very big conference taking place in Chicago. Because basically right now, a lot of people are thinking that this war is very, very unnecessary.
Yeah.
And actually, what's going to happen if this were to start is that you're going to see this that spin off into, you know, Africa, spin off into Asia, spin off into Europe. And so a lot of, so basically, there's going to be a whole bunch of people converging in Chicago. So I was going to see if people want to call and come. Did you hear about this?
No, I didn't hear about that particular conference, but I know Linda is organizing a big anti-war mobilization. Are you interested in having...
Anyway, the story is that...
Hey, man, maybe this guy can hear us. Wait a minute, buddy, just shut up. Listen, buddy, I'm no longer slack laying back here. You call Linda and help get him out of jail, because if you're not working with him, you're not working with the real anti-war movement. I support other factions, but you got to include, as Linda said, no revolution will start without him.
If you really are...
Are you in
495. They should call right now. We're going to be here immediately.
Hey, buddy, it ain't going to spread that much. The war is going to be a tiny little controlled apocalypse. A little Armageddon. Do not worry. I suggest you go home and read the laws of media.
I'd like to know what it's like to be gay.
Yeah. I don't think that guy couldn't hear his mic.
No.
Go, next caller.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
You can hear me.
Yeah, I can hear you. What's up?
Yeah, well, the last caller claimed they couldn't hear it. Sounded like he was a propagandist.
There you go. He had one mouth, no ears.
What do you want to tell us now?
What do I want to tell you now?
Or anybody?
I don't know. I'm just saying hi, Bob. How you doing?
I'm doing okay.
Oh, good. Okay. So clue me in. I just came in. What's been going on?
We've been on the air for 3.5 years.
Yeah, no, I mean, I just came in tonight.
Oh, okay, well, we had some messages, we had responses to the CBC broadcast, people ordering tapes from Kentucky and across the country, but we had a caller from North York worried about the Chinese fear of the number 4, so it looks like they're going to have to put 22 everywhere where there's number 4.
That's right, a couple of twos.
Yeah, have you heard?
That's actually what I called to talk to you about, Bob.
Yeah, is this Andrew?
It is. How are you doing?
Okay, yeah, I saw you. Why don't you tell him how Bob Marshall... Oh, you probably didn't hear... I was quite upset what Bob Marshall did. Did you get a chance to talk to him?
I talked to Bob Marshall, yeah.
What's he saying?
Well, he was talking about you. Saying some things about you.
Yeah?
And he thinks very highly of you.
Well, he doesn't do that when he gets in the electric state. He can't handle that discarnate microphone.
Yeah, you know, it's true. He's,
privately, he probably even gave you a couple of Bob Dobb insights and knocked you away like the...
He did.
The second nature is evolutionary process. Remember that one?
Yeah, yeah. He's a flesh and blood dude, though. He was wearing a white suit, you know?
Yeah, he was telling them, it is happening again. It is happening again. Just like at the Roadhouse Cafe.
Yep, that's right.
Okay, Andrew, you had a couple of percepts from him. What do you make of that now?
Well, I was going to talk about the Digital Bob, the 22.
Okay, go ahead.
Because you've been talking about the Digital Bob for a while, huh?
Yeah.
Have you not?
I have. Go ahead.
It was something that I caught off the CBC thing, which was the 99.9 plus the 1.1. Do you remember that whole thing?
Yeah, we made a mistake. You want to explain that?
No, it wasn't a mistake.
No, it wasn't a mistake. Yeah, yeah. Tell them about it.
Well, the 99.9 and the 1.1, which we pointed out, added up to the 101%.
Yeah, because originally in the book of The Subgenius by Stang, he says the WAD, the Empire, the Masonic Glorp, is 33.3%, and the Pinks are 66.6%.
Oh, yeah.
So that makes 99.9%. And then he said the Subgenius is 1.1%.
That's 101.
Yeah, so that adds up to a total of 101, and then what did Bob Marshall...
Bikes, man. That's digital information.
Right, so that echoes the... How did that become 22?
Well, because if you take and lay the alphabet over the 101, then you get AOA, right? Or
right.
A0A, which is the ant stage, A.
Right.
And then if you double that, and going, you're talking about going from the ant stage to the B stage, then you double the ones and you get twos from those. You get 202, lay the alphabet over that, and you all know what it's about.
Yeah, that's how you can explain the 101 is Stang's mistaken way of referring to 22. He couldn't really bring himself to explain the 202 factor.
202, and the twos and the zeros are the new digital format for you, Bob.
Yeah, and maybe he probably thought he was adding it up to 100, but he was trying to resist the 22 factor. His subconscious put in the mistake.
That's right.
And then you, as a new subgenius, could see what it was really telling us.
There's half a step between subconscious and subgenius, Bob.
The interval. That's the man.
You get rid of the zero between the 202. What do you get? It's 22.
Well, what do you think BYOB stands for? Did you hear that message?
No, I didn't hear that.
Someone's very concerned about why Madonna is the most well-known person in the world.
Right.
And the second question for seasonal meditation was BYOB.
Right.
And I would suggest the Y is a reference to an image in Stephen Hawking's book, A Brief History of Time,
right,
where the world sheet is an image that looks like a Y when you measure the world strings, the original energy realities after the Big Bang.
All right.
Even though Hawking doesn't know the strings collapse as soon as the Big Bang happens, he thinks that the strings, these world strings, in quotes, world strings, maintain a reality for a while, and then they move and they're measured into a world sheet. That image is the Y. So BYOB, bring your own beer, is... the Nimrod holiday symbol for a local version of Bob through the Molson dynasty, right?
Right.
I mean, it's, what was it, Strange Beer was the McKenzie Brothers movie. Did you ever see that?
Strange Brew.
Strange Brew, excellent movie where they showed the brewery oligarch in Canada was using a Fritz Kramer Nazi-like character as his main surveillance. Did you see that movie?
No, I didn't see it. I know about it, but I didn't see it.
But you know, beer, as Zappa has pointed out in his biography, is the main element of war, the agent of war and violence and aggression, right?
Sure.
So I think the Pinks take over during the Nimrod holiday, and they stick in the Y, the Hawking world string.
Isn't Y one of the great questions, Bob? Maybe it's W-H-Y. The subject. Maybe it's just a short form.
Well, do you know that Y is a question for Western man? It came from the alphabet and will end with the alphabet. I don't think any of your buddies ask the question Y anymore. They're electrified. Y is a visual space looking for the first cause or a sequence of causes. It's linear. What would be the question for Tribal Man?
The question for who?
Tribal Electric Man. Yeah.
Tribal Electric Man?
Yeah, if it's not why, that's Visual Man. What would Acoustic Man's question be?
Maybe when? I don't know.
Oh, you're right. When? You know why that is?
Phew,
because I'm very good, Andrew, because under electric conditions, we have perpetual motion. How do you
see? Right?
Perpetual motion reality.
Isn't it when perpetual, isn't it actually accelerated and perpetual at the same time?
Yes, yes.
Going on, and then when it hits the end, it just, it's...
It cancels its reservation and moves on. Yeah, yeah. See, the main point, though, when you have perpetual motion, then insanity rears its effect by worrying about the unstoppability of reality. When will it stop? In other words, when?
When? There you go. Oh, full circle there.
Well, Steve, well, Andrew, I think you've had enough time. We're going to another...
Wait, okay.
All right, go ahead.
And this was the whole thing about the eco-fascists.
Yeah, what about them?
And how is it not ironic that that those guys who are... waking up the old animals, or in fact riding the new animals to do that?
Well, that's the first step that Bob Marshall gave you. The new animals are the second phase of evolution, man's technology.
Yeah, I think that, but why are they, how come the eco-fascists get to ride the new animals to wake up the old ones?
Do I understand media ecology? They have to use the tetrad to understand the relationship between these massive environments and their interaction with the tiniest environment, the discarnate head of a pin situation of the electric discarnate.
So if they understand all this stuff, why are they working against it, Bob?
Why are they what?
What's their motivation for working against it?
Why don't they? Well, they don't understand. Nobody
understands. They have to understand it to work with it.
Yeah, they have to understand me. That's why this is a mega project. I'm going to be doing this for decades, talking to you people and replaying the party line, you know. It's lucky I only do it once every 2 weeks or, you know, I'd be a boring person. I've got much other things to do, but this is going to have to be talked about until everybody gets it. And we will all get it because it'll be...
Hey, well, Andrew, baby, that was rude.
that was my fault, actually.
Oh, Mike, you did that? Oh, sorry, Andrew, it wasn't you. Mike is just all screwed up tonight. He can't make anything work.
So anyways, Andrew, just to finish it off, everybody will understand it, because Bob Rule is from 1990 to 2020, so at least by 2020, 101 becomes, you fill it in, what, 222%? Not 100%. Okay, Andrew?
Yes, Bob.
You ready?
Sorry,
well, sure. How could you do that, Mike? What are you doing, jerking off over there? Banging the mic, it hits the phone?
Unstoppability for Mike.
Let's go to another line. I just want to try something. I'm going to try to get back to the phones the way we had them set up before, where everything was normal.
Oh, I see.
The mic.
You mean Dylan screwed us up?
What? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't like that name, Dylan, either.
That was a bad call.
Yeah, that guy. He's a motivated somnambulist. He's worried about stopping the war. You ain't going to stop that war, buddy. Yeah. This is war.
Okay, I just cut you off, so hold on. Are you there? You're not, I'm not hearing you, though. The call's there. What am I doing wrong?
No.
Can you hear me still? Yeah. I'm still on the air. That's the tape. You're there now?
Yeah.
You're there now. You're not there. It's not working this time. It's not working as well as it used to work. So, let's go back to our old-fashioned system for now. Put you back on the air.
Okay.
I'm not on. Yeah, you are. You're there.
Okay.
Hello?
Yeah.
Hello. Sorry.
Oh, hello.
Oh, sorry. Hi, Evan.
It was really exciting. I could hear CKLN in my left ear, which is the phone ear. It was exciting.
When we put you on hold, that's what happens.
just a couple of quick things. Hello, Michael.
Hi.
Hello, by the way.
Hey, hi.
You were talking about...
I owe you some money, Ed. I'm going to get you some money.
Yeah?
Yeah, you deserve it. I'm going to pay you.
For what?
For a taping.
Oh.
Okay.
It's a petroleum-based product, isn't it?
Yep.
Well, in the petroleum news, OPEC was meeting in Vienna. And did you say something about the 400,000 being an elect number?
Yeah, in the Book of Revelations, it's 144,000 is the elect.
Yeah. What? 144,000?
Is the elect in the Bible for the true Christians who join into the true church or something like that. You know, it's a bunch of nonsense, but that's where the 12 by 12 comes in. 144 is an important number, but, you know, the Bible has distorted it.
It's just that, you know, you're... approach to numerology is, you know, very deft and dazzling and nimble. So when you read the business page, you know, it's sluggish. It's big objects being pushed around.
Mike is just jerking away. Mike's in a holiday mood. It's like, just consider him blowing his whistle. He's got his party hat on. Go ahead, Ed.
This guy,
look at him, look.
Golem Resma Akwazda. Golem Ezra Akwazda. He's the Iranian oil minister.
Yeah.
The way it's looking now, with the stalemate of the Mideast war, there's going to be an oil glut, which I think a few 100,000 motorists are wondering about.
What was that?
This glut.
Yeah, but there's not going to be a stalemate. There's going to be a war.
Yeah. But anyway, the point is, this oil minister of Iran, he thinks they're overproducing. I was getting that number wrong. He wants them to go down 400,000 barrels a day, all the OPEC members. You know what number they're trying to reach?
Maybe we could...
22.5 million barrels a day.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. because the Ecuadorian oil minister says the outlook for the second and third quarter of 91 seems to indicate that with current production levels, we will be producing above demand levels, says Ecuador's oil minister, Diego Tamariz. And he estimates that demand will be 21 million to 21.5 million barrels a day if there's no war in the Gulf. Seems a kind of interesting evasive action around the 22 number here in the Mideast oil quota situation.
Yeah.
And they're trying not to think about the war, it looks like.
Okay. They're trying to what?
Yeah, sorry.
Oh, hello.
Oh, sorry, hi.
What did you say, Edward?
Hello?
Yeah, you're on, Ed.
Oh, okay.
You got thrown by your own desk.
I was talking to my instant replay.
So what were you saying?
Well, that was just a little bit of oil trivia, you know, 22 million barrels a day, just a trivial number.
And they seem, well, let me tell you this. Maybe this is the pattern. I'm reading from an Excess file, Excess transcript, back in the 70s. It says, there's been water vapor discovered by certain means on a certain star system far from our planet, approximately 22.5 million light years away. All right? Now, we are seeing the light from that star, as that light existed 22.5 million years after the light left the star, after it left that particular star. The water vapor that has been discovered there is long gone on that star. We discovered it here. It's long gone there. 22.5 million years has elapsed. We see it now as now. Where that light existed, it is 22.5 million years later. Look what has happened upon this earth in 22.5 million years. So the 22.5, the number is the theme tonight, Ed. So unless you want to get another topic, we got to move.
Just one quick thing. It relates to the extraterrestrial angle you just put in. You know that William Cooper has been getting more distribution of his message in Toronto? The current Common Ground New Age Holistic Meg. Mike, is this stuff bugging you? You try to displace.
No. We're just developing our subgenius' depth perception and acoustic phase. We've got to learn to work with this noise.
I feel quintophonic right now.
Just keep plowing ahead.
Anyway, William Cooper is getting more hearing in Toronto now because 30,000 issues of Common Ground.
Yeah.
At the beginning of a two-part summary of the William Cooper text. And you and the Exists have some reservations about Mr. Cooper's explication.
Well, that means common. Look at that, Common Ground. Where's the hidden ground? The hidden ground on the Common Ground is there a pink media outlet? Because they're going to hike up Bill Cooper's paranoia about the Exists and the fact they've landed. And this is what the pinks have to rely on, just to create the idea the Exists are strangers and going to hurt us. And that's why Cooper is being satirized on Twin Peaks. You get the Cooper element on Twin Peaks?
Oh, Dale Cooper, the FBI.
Yeah, but the message he got from Major Briggs way back there, the extraterrestrial message, was said, Cooper, Cooper, Cooper. That's referring to the dark Bob, you know, the Bob that looks violent.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's talk about Major Briggs. Did you see what happened to him in the last minute of the last show?
I only saw the first minute. They were serving this beautiful buffet.
Okay, listen to this. What happened is he was made discarnate by an owl. Okay? Now, the owls are the last statement to be understood from the giant when he told Cooper that the owls are not what they seem. All right? So look at this factor about the owls. Major Briggs was made discarnate in the last image of the show after Cooper notices the owl. Now, here's the motif and conceptual continuity of the owl image in the secret diary of Laura Palmer. All right?
Yeah.
Starts off July 23rd, 1984, very early entry in the diary, page 7. It says, she's talking about she slept until just 15 minutes ago, she's telling her diary. No dreams at all, except Mom says she heard me calling out to her, and then I hooted like an owl. See that? There's the fact. As a young girl, she's, I'd say, 14 years, no, 12 years old at that point. She's hooting like an owl. And at the end of the diary entry, she says, Laura, hoot, hoot. Now, the next thing to note about the owl is, on page 19, the August 11th entry, where Laura tells in her secret diary, she's writing her diary, and she says, the owls have started hooting. One of them is just above me in a tree. Something about him is strange. I know it is a boy owl, and I feel like he's watching me. Each time I look up at him, his head moves like he's quickly turning away from me. I wonder if he knows what I've been writing. God, I had better start being a very good girl right away. Perhaps he is a bird like in that story I read. This big bird could swoop down and rest on someone's shoulder, acting very sweet, but would then read the person's mind. If the person was thinking bad thoughts, the bird would peck away at the person's eyes and ears so that there would only be questions of sound and sight in the person's head instead of bad and nasty thoughts. And then she says, I dream of flying sometimes. I wonder if birds dream of going to school or to work sometimes, having suits and dresses instead of the feathers we dream of. I would fly right over Twin Peaks and out over the land beyond it. I'd never come back if I didn't have to. And then the next owl reference that I noticed was on page 45, when Laura visits the log lady near 1400 River Road. There's the 14 motif, which we're seeing surfacing as 22 becomes obvious, even to people like Andrew, that caller we just had. 14 is what we're looking for. And it says on page 45 that she's trying to recall what the owl, what the log lady told her, and she says, the log lady said it's important to remember things you see and feel. Owls are sometimes big. There. That was the one I'd forgotten totally, and it's in italics. Owls are sometimes big. Now, in the last scene, when the owl above the urinating aging Cooper looks about, and then the white light appears, and then Major Briggs disappears, and Cooper runs to find him, you see that, I guess, Major Briggs sees this image of a huge, either a person in a cape or an owl shape that's standing there in the white light in a discarnate state. So there's the reference to owl, and I'll just hold it there. Edward, isn't that interesting about the owl? Now, you want to say something there?
Oh, it's fascinating. I'm thinking about Freud's hot theories about men urinating in the woods and this Christmas card I got with an owl on it. But he's such a cute little androgynous Care Bear owl. But, excuse me, I'm blathering. You were saying, Bob?
Well, when did you get that Christmas card? Today?
I got it from Yogi Krishan about 3 days ago.
Oh, okay. And he put an owl on it?
Yeah.
You're going to have to reassess that, Yogi. Because, as Dublin pointed out, Harold Innes begins his essay in The Bias of Communication. The Bias of Communication, the first line in Harold Innes' first essay called Minerva's Owl, he says, quote, Minerva's owl takes flight, da-da-da-da-da, into the gathering dusk. So there you have this twilight environmental figure around the idea of the owl, which leads to the next entry in Laura's diary, August 6th, page 70. She's talking about, I have such an anger and an urge to charge at this guy, says Laura, to call the wind a liar for never showing itself, an urge to scream at the two who followed, who allowed my birth, cries for help to anyone who will hear them, to scream into the street that there's a lack of miracles in Mother Nature herself. And then she says, Mother Nature's divinity is a lie. Her divinity is a lie. And that's the fact that the eco-fascists worship and merge with the divine animal syndrome that nature takes on under the new electric nature. Andrew should note that. So Laura's saying her divinity is a lie. And then she says, in a forest of trees, again and again, I've been brought down. Surgery, she says, surgery, it's not bad for her. Well, she'd be 14 years old here, I think. 14, she's saying. Surgery of a strange and indescribable nature takes place in the trees. Blood is let. This mother nature has not done away with this evil, nor has it opened its wood to allow a scream to escape. Instead, it cradles this man and keeps him safe from discovery, safe from delight. I don't know if she's referring to Bob or the owl man. He knows the planet will not betray him. This light will come, the daylight, and stay, leave only to return on schedule. He has a promise. The universe's habit, conveniently requiring a 12-hour fix of the two extremes of night and day. And then Laura says, his time is the evening, the hour during which rescue is least possible, and when most with pure hopes and dreams and memories of swinging on swing sets are fast asleep. That must be children. Their eyes moving quickly under their lids, seeing nothing. So there's the owl in the evening, which Dublin cleverly pointed out many shows ago. So what do you think this owl could refer to?
It points at so many. The thing I keep focusing on is the eyes moving quickly under the lid, seeing nothing. I mean, that refers to the dream state. I just haven't seen enough of the program. Why is there so much suffusion of fear in the words from Laura's diary? I think partly it's adolescent fear of coming to know yourself and fear of her divine inner self.
Now you're rambling, Edward. Here's the next point about the owl. When Bob, two shows ago, the climactic show when Leland is caught, and when Leland is put in the jail cell, when they come in to make him confess, and Cooper makes Bob come through, right? Or Bob comes through at his own will. What does Bob do when he begins to make his confession through Leland? He hoots like an owl. He hoots like an owl. Did you notice that, Mike? He did. He hooted as he went into, hoo, 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 hoo. Who did it? Me? You? Did I do it? Yeah. He was hooting. So this owl is the last aphorism from the giant we got to deal with. Scott's sitting outside here, and Scott pointed out the owl may refer to the order of the white lion, or that the owl was a reference to a sensory goddess, the eye goddess. Much to do, but we're there now, and we'll probably get a lot more information this weekend from David Lynch on the owl syndrome, since that's what he ended with. And of course, the last show before this ended was the owl, which had a curved head like Bob's head. Curved hair kind of thing. So, Edward, what do you say? Make it quick. We got to go. I think we got a call.
Hear my coffee.
I better go.
We haven't got a call, Ed. You can stay.
Well, this is one thing. The owl is so often seen as a benign icon. Owl cigars and this owl Christmas card. And,
yeah.
The owls that are throughout Twin Peaks, aren't they ominous, fear symbols? They're just beyond human comprehension. I mean, everyone's speculating on what the owl means. Minerva's owl was kind of a it was kind of a grim manifestation of Minerva's wisdom. Minerva the hunter, you know, that it drew blood from her shoulder.
Well, what Innes meant when he said Minerva's owl takes flight in the gathering dust is that knowledge of knowledge creators in an empire would always blossom as that empire went into its twilight, went into its decline. And so the 20th century, is that the decline of something, and therefore we have this knowledge explosion? See, this is the thing, is Minerva's Isle represents giant. We got wisdom or something.
Scott's
sitting outside here, and so this is the thing, is that the software takes over. We have our software renaissance, our software feast, but it's a sign of something dying. Is it just the hardware world? That's the question, right? Is this raised by David Lynch?
That's what he ended
with. And of course, the last show before this end.
I'm having my coffee break.
Okay. I'm going to talk about the 40s now, Ed.
Maybe Scott should come in. He had some good input on David Lynch.
We've hit that muddy point, Mike, where it may appear we've lost our sense of direction. We're feeling so slack. Now, Mike, you can always tell if you get another caller, right? And we don't have another caller, so it doesn't matter if Ed stays on. So I'm going to explore this with Ed.
And, of course, the last show,
as soon as someone else comes on, they can get on.
Well, Bob, we're a couple of fine lads together, aren't we? Let's get russet and talk about girls, eh? Yes, we could sing some really dirty songs, and I find you curiously pleasant company, young Bob. Friends, Bob. Of course.
All right, now, Edward, I'm going to talk about a development on a message from George where he talked about we're retrieving the 40s. And of course, all right.
Yes.
He said that last show, you may have missed that. But what he was pointing out is that we were retrieving the 40s, if I recall, in two ways. The Berlin Armada of support, the airlift into Eastern Europe that happened in 1948, we're being asked to retrieve that now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And help Eastern Europe. And that was called the Marshall Plan back then. And the other fact is that the icon of World War II, or the Middle East figure of Arabia in the 40s during the World War II situation, that remained a strong figure throughout the World War III from 45 till soon, right? And now we're probably in World War IV, which includes a tetrad. And so we've retrieved the Middle East figure from World War II with the present Gulf crisis, all right? Now, the interesting bottom-up factor is that what is CBC doing? Since they're probably in this pink media ecological strategy to create the mood and atmosphere of the 40s, what are they going to do? Shut down the TV, right? And boost the radio. So they want to create an artificial ersatz anti-environment to the bop slack from 1990 to 2020 by retrieving the 40s, by emphasizing a redesigned radio content programming, and emphasizing the shutting down of the tactile mesh of TV. This is interesting that they want to retrieve the hot radio environment. This is pink media ecology.
You were talking about this retrieving many symptoms, like Preston Manning's Reform Party, which is going to slightly wiggle the balance of power in Canada the next couple of years. It has its roots back in 30s radio populism.
Yeah, yeah. So you see this worrying by and whining by the CBC is that if they were smart, they wouldn't, like, give a coverage overload based on people crying because they're losing their jobs. And, you know, every one of them is going to find a job pretty quickly because they network, right? But if they understood that you don't get a sympathy for their plight by emphasizing the obvious symptoms, they should have used Bob knowledge and talked about the retrieval of radio and the 40s syndrome as the reason why they were being cut back. And then people would listen.
Well, why don't they phone your show? They could get on the radio just like...
I think we have a caller right now, Ed. We're going to hang out.
Oh, I think it's that anchor man from New Brunswick. I think he's calling you now, Bob.
Yeah, okay.
Good night.
Mr. Irving. Okay. Let's see how Mike can handle this. Okay, caller.
Mike has lost a sense of proportion here of how to get callers. Is the caller still there? The red light there?
Caller, go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah, you're on.
I'm on.
Yeah.
I just dialed. I'm not the caller. I'm the next caller.
That's okay.
All right. I'll be the next caller.
Yeah.
I'll be...
You work for CBC?
No.
Oh, darn.
I follow Twin Peaks, though.
Ah, are you the patient of Connie?
No.
Okay. Sure.
I wanted to mention a few things about the bird that you haven't been mentioning, the owl.
That we haven't been mentioning?
Well, I can't really analyze them. I want to leave it up to you to analyze them.
We were mentioning the owl.
There's some special things about it as a bird.
Okay, go ahead.
First of all, it's got this really weird neck that twists all the way around one side and another, and back and forth. It's like a Steadicam, is what it's like.
Yeah, it could be James B's TV exorcism.
The thing darts all around.
Like the Exorcist image. Remember when Linda Blair would rotate her head when she was possessed by the Antibob?
Yeah, but it's traveling, and it stays steady. It doesn't spin around. Like in the cartoon.
Oh, I see. It's a 30 years.
I'll make it more clear because there's something else. It is not a soaring kind of predator bird that goes way up there with the big long wings and then dives down. It is one of the little birds that has the short, strong wings, and it darts in and around the trees on a low level.
Yeah.
And this neck of it keeps its eye steady, like a Steadicam, while it's darting around in and about the trees.
So it's an image for television.
Also, it has these eyes in front, the binocular vision.
Yeah, which is not the television.
And it's not like most birds. Most birds have eyes on either side.
Maybe the owl is comprehensive. It's visual space and the acoustic tactile TV image. The eyes is visual space, split man. The acoustic space is cyclopean, one eye. But two eyes plus the mini cam neck.
It's also like human.
You've really helped us understand the...
And it's like human or a chimpanzee, which gives you the three-dimensional view. And in the case of the animal itself, it helps it see how close it is when it's trying to get after a mouse or something.
Yeah, that's excellent. That's excellent percept there.
So it's the predator bird of the heavy forest.
And the heavy forest is a software environment we're in, where everybody feels like they're lost in the bush.
And it's not a soaring bird or a swooping bird.
Yeah, that's movie.
That would be like a hawk or an eagle.
Yeah, that's movie. That's kinetic space. There's something, I won't say static, but it's quick, like TV. TV's quick.
They have birds like this in other forests, in other parts of the world, as there's a niche for all different creatures. And they have predator birds of various types, including the ones that go around in the forest. Oh, but this one is the night hunter of the forest.
Yeah, the night owl.
So you put it together, Bob. I'm just going on the physical.
What?
I used to have a farm, and I used to have an owl that would show up sometimes at night and sit on one of the hydro poles looking for mice. And it would sit there really still, doing nothing.
What about
looking?
Yeah, what about Ginsberg's poem, Howl?
I don't know about them. I heard you talking about them the other day. Four weeks ago.
Yeah.
What can you... I can't tell you anything. You tell me. There were a number of books.
Let's share what we could tell each other. We could try a little of our ESP gland. Let's return to the native style. bet you that's the kind of sound that Angelo Badalamenti will be using in future shows as he probes the meaning of the owl image. Certainly isn't a sound like Baba. Baba. The O in Bob, though. The Y. Could the Y refer to the owl? B-Y-O-B. The Y. The Y is like a feather symbol or a winged letter. You know, caller, all of the holy offices have slack in the sense they are parallel operations on the individual, the tribal, the medium, the super angel. Factors with an interdependence of the individual, the tribal, the medium, and the super angel. I wonder what Hawk will do. Will Hawk be the one who discovers the owl and its meaning? We got two callers. Thanks a lot.
Hawks are the ones that are way above everything, and they look down, and they've got an eye on them that will see anything moving down there. And they can swoop down real fast.
Well, the interval is an abstract thing now. As Tom Ridge pointed out 2 weeks ago, the electric condition fosters abstract thinking. And the interval becomes an abstract thing. We come on, we're going to another caller. And then we'll get into the excess media and explain their metal density and time travel and gravity. Okay, take a call.
Okay, thanks for calling. You're listening to Church of the Subgenius Show. My name is Michael Dyer with J.R. Bob Dobbs. And we're almost at the halfway point. We've shifted, haven't we? We've made an important shift with that call.
I think so, yeah.
I think so, too. We have three lights.
I think we opened up the field.
I think we did. Yeah. I don't know what it was, whether it was the music or the call or the effect.
I think the owl, I think the caller did a fine job of expanding on the image of the owl.
I want to apologize for the phones tonight. I don't know what's going on, but we'll try this again. Be patient.
What did you say? Hello?
Yeah, you're on it.
Oh.
You can throw my own.
I was talking to my.
Yeah. What were you saying?
Well, that was just a little bit of oil turvy, you know, 22 million barrels a day.
Sure, sure, sure. Well, let me tell you this. Maybe this is the pattern. Really from a.
Can the caller? Okay, caller, go ahead.
Hello?
Hello, you're on.
Yeah, Bob, it's Tom.
Oh, okay.
I want to get back to the idea you touched on, which is very interesting, which is the cutting of the funds of the CBC.
Oh, yeah, you like that idea, the retrieval of the 40s?
Well, I like the idea because it shows that the emperor and the owners of the system are trying to do some media ecology.
Yeah.
And I wondered if we could dialogue on that. For instance, do you think that the reason that they're doing that is because now that they've let us down the cultural paradigm of frozen us in TV space with the threat of the rapid productivity emerging from the new Europe, that they now have to sort of take us out of suspended animation, and so they're using the hot medium to do it?
I think that might be it, yeah. The thing is that we're definitely into a post-television mood. We recognize the dynamics of TV, so we've become conscious. The problem is that the pinks operate out of paranoia. I don't know if that was the original sensation. They don't operate.
In other words, crisis management.
Yeah, but they don't operate out of slack. You see, my subgenius media ecology is like a movement around a still point, and that point is a resonating acoustic sphere with boundaries nowhere and centers everywhere. So it has slack. There's no paranoia. The pink translated into visual space. It becomes paranoid, and so that's the problem. The planet has been hijacked at that level, though not at my level, and that's all that's allowed to be given to people, that when you move into a new environment, it's always a parody of slack. It's always tense and a problem.
Yeah.
So they're doing media ecology from the other side.
Yeah, I think that it's excuse me. I think it's a fascinating.
You okay, buddy? You okay?
Yeah. Everybody's
you all right? You're gonna get sick. You're joking.
I think it's a tremendous, really interesting, but it is a 180-degree shift, and it is the crisis management. They do operate by crisis management. They wait till the next to a crisis until they take action.
Well, the motif of emotional matrix is crisis management. That's paranoia. They've always operated under crisis management. It's just that they're now manipulating the form, not the content. That's their media ecology, from a paranoid point.
Okay. The owners of the media Always endeavored, McLuhan said, to give the public what it wants because they sense their powers in the medium and not in the message or the program. Now, you're saying now they're adopting and they're still manipulating.
The emperor's in the audience. They want to be the public, give themselves what they want. See, so that's how they become in the audience and manipulate the global theater. That's why Madonna becomes the most famous person in the planet. She's hiked up as the empress, and she's obviously not skillful enough to handle the pressure of that point. Therefore, they hike up stupidity as the emperor.
All right, so they're sticking with the same strategy, keep the people in a state of illusion. They're just changing their tactics.
Because they had to, because they're...
getting tired of the whole thing, to tell you the truth, and I think the people are getting tired, and I'm wondering how long they're going to allow themselves to be jerked around. When are they going to tell the emperor that
enough is enough,
and we've got to...
That's the mood we're in, Tom. The mood is that people are tired. They are no longer inside the TV hallucination. They now see the game. Okay, so what do? They give the Bob Rays and the whatever they are, the people who seem to represent the people, the figures, the switchboard controls, and the oligarchs know that isn't the switchboard anymore. So they're going to create and use the participation mystique of a welcome home environment. So you see, it's a switch, right? When people catch on, they've caught on to being manipulated, but they don't know that the mood they're in now was manipulated for them. In other words, the oligarchs are aware of the post-TV mood.
Yeah, well, now it's going to be interesting to see what they do with the radio.
It's your phrase, so karate. Don't you say something about... You said something about karate the other day.
Yeah, use your weight.
Use your weight.
In karate, if a guy's bigger than you, you learn to use his own weight, even though he's bigger than you. You use his weight against him.
Now look at the pun there. The people aren't going to wait anymore.
Yeah.
So they're going to use that weight, to use it against the public. The waiting is the weight that will be used against the public by the karate of the pinks.
Well, what's fascinating is the degree to which Parizol comes into town. And we have this tremendous, huge colony in disguise, a magnificent paradigm created in 1867 has lasted this long.
Yeah.
And now the real question is, how do we keep the colonies together and quiet? We let Quebec do its own thing. How do you see Quebec fall within the framework of the Queen and the control she has over Canada?
Well, they're going to... the decentralized myth was a natural, inevitable effect of the Electric Age, which has been going on for 150 years. So the pink management kept a center margin structure for over our last 100 years,
mm-hmm.
and then they had to deal with the decentralized effect, and they played catch-up to that. Now, since the electric environment is sort of being perceived consciously by people as the present mood of return to a human scale need, then the public wants to retrieve a centralist mandate. But they want to participate in it. But they have to deal with the fact that the electric media is decentralized regardless of the mood that's projected on it. So the oligarchs now know that the decentralist mandate will come, yet that is not the point now. It's a cliche. It's obsolete. It works. So they're letting Quebec go free. And the Queen can then hide in the discarnate state of moving money around the planet. They want to break up the money structures of
organization.
Space. Yeah, they want that. And the people will go with that because that's what they think they've been betrayed by, the center margin structure. They've been betrayed by it.
Yeah.
But, of course, the general public never is up to date with its own best interests. As a matter of fact, if they were wise, they'd want to bring back a centralist mandate, bring back Bob Rule, a center margin structure in a new way.
Well, it would seem that what they should strategically do is force them into bringing the same strategy back on all levels. In other words, let's shut down Air Canada, but go gung-ho with the railway and retrieve that central structure. Isn't that what you're saying?
No, that's not the new center margin structure. The new center margin structure is pure software. See, that's the problem, is that the modern leader imposes his paranoid content hijacking centralized software image, the Oral Office, the Oval Office, or the failed image of Mulroney, and they don't do it and offer slack. What we want is an image of proper central management, and that's what I offer.
So you're saying we're in a stage of where we're looking, we're putting forth the creative leader?
Yeah, which will have
a creative leader.
And their creative leader, the pink creative leader, will be a decentralist, which is not really what we need. We need a creative centralist, because they will decentralize the hardware
what
structures.
What software technology can we use to centralize things?
Well, I suggest that I am that technology. My image and my work is the technology.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an organic art form. Mm-hmm. All right, so what I do is the generator of confidence that there is a still point at the center. People don't have that.
I don't know about that.
Because they're dealing with a decentralized mandate, a frustrated centralized image, and the oligarchs take advantage of that confusion and operate in the pink interval between the centralist and the decentralist.
Let's share.
And they are paranoid. I would operate in the interval between centralist and decentralist with slack. And then people would be happy with the decentralized fact and accept centralism.
Would you continue to use the radio as a means of updating consciousness and enhancing awareness?
Only once every 2 weeks. As I move into mixed corporate media and the other mega projects, I'd use all the media.
So you would just shift around and dance on different toes?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
Well, somewhere McLuhan said that the emperor is a stage beyond the creative leader. Do you see that after this era of looking for creative leaders, that we'll get to the point where the emperor will come out visible out front?
Yeah, that would be me, the emperor, visible, which my son raised 2 weeks ago after hearing the CBC interview. My foster son said, I can't wait. He can't wait until Bob is a visual icon. That's what we want.
You know, Colorado.
Well, with that, Bob, I'll look forward to that, and I appreciate the insight.
Thanks.
Take care.
You triggered it off.
Okay.
Any other callers, Mike?
Hello?
Okay, go ahead. This is Sean?
Hello?
Yeah.
I just started listening 2 weeks ago.
Great.
And I'm having some real trouble following a lot of the concepts, because I don't understand the jargon.
Yeah.
But last week you were talking about art a little bit, creativity. You said that there was no use for creativity or something like that.
I didn't understand exactly
what you meant.
Well, as a previous caller, Tom Rich, said in his manifesto at the beginning of the show, culture is our business. Capital A art is our business. Creativity is a cliche. In other words, software producer mania is the run-of-the-mill, the normal, working in the farm, shoe salesman reality we've got today. So how can you be creative and not be duped into offering product as content for the media? You become a learner. And what do you learn? Well, you study the effects of media. You study the formal dynamics with a little eye on the pink conspiracy. In other words, I hate to repeat myself, but I have to use McLuhan and then Peter Brussel, and then Zappa, Finnegan's Wake, Cosmic Awareness, Garrett Dean, and Herbert Armstrong. Those are the holy offices we use here. But back to your probe. I say that creativity is the sleep of modern man. I say it's a motivated somnambulism. I say it's a reflex reaction. It's a decentralizing and multi-leveled consciousness. Therefore, you have autonomy. But that will not give you slack. Slack is understanding. And understanding comes from understanding the process of the mythic interplay. These are words for you, right? So just jump in any point you want.
Now, as far as I understand it, software is... it's media information. Is that right?
All right. I'll say that a television image, what you hear on the radio or TV, the electric environment is software, whereas when you hold a book or a newspaper or a baseball bat, that's hardware. So, yes, at this primitive level, we'll say software is information. We got a lot of that today, haven't we?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people, a lot of teamwork going in to manufacture that information. A lot of people going through stress manufacturing the information. You wouldn't believe the stress that goes on at this station to keep this station functioning. All right, and we provide a great addiction or anesthetic for people, a necessary anesthetic. But where's the slack? All right, that's software. What's your next point?
No, that's all I wanted to know. I just wanted to...
get a finger on one word.
I just wanted you to elaborate on the concept of... creativity. I thought that was a bit disturbing last week.
Okay, now listen. Creativity, if you can listen, creativity is generally a software activity, though it was for a long time a hardware activity in the sense you invented hardware gadgets. But hardware is puny compared to the software environments. So I know that the general zeitgeist feeling is a preference for individual imagination, approaching and approximating fantasy. But that is your daily work. You're a culture worker. That's a phrase. You're a culture worker. We're all culture workers, whether you get a label or not, whether you are an independent producer or a corporate producer. You're a culture worker. Culture is your business. Software is your addiction. That ain't the slack. The slack is always not conventional operations. Conventional operations is the somnambulism, the dream of your daily prison. All right?
Yeah, all right. Thanks.
So that's what I mean by creativity is being a cliche.
Okay, I think you clarified that for me.
Yeah, now we've just got you at a plateau. There's much more, so keep listening, I hope, because we got to run that percept up and down the spiral and flip it into a tetrad. So there's much more to probe this statement I've made, okay?
Yeah, all right, I'll keep listening.
Thanks. Okay.
To tell them that I was sad to go without my parents. To go without my parents.
We've got a half an hour left in the show. Well, I'm sorry I've been so
you're great. I like
laid
your,
back tonight. And,
well, you're sick. You know, you got a cold.
Well, it's no excuse, though. Yes. You're listening to the
Excellent.
Of the Subgenius Show, syndicated now in 50 countries around the world. And my name is Michael Dyer. Across from me is J.R. Bob Dobbs.
Beaming it, Mike. Beam the Bob.
A reminder, if you didn't hear the show at the beginning, until we'll be back next week. We're not going to skip a week. We're going to be back for, I guess, our last show of the year.
And discuss more creativity.
Next Wednesday night.
In with callers?
Yeah, we do.
Okay.
Should we go right to it, Bob?
Yeah, it's probably
Should
Dublin.
I just press the button?
Yeah, about time for Dublin.
Okay. Hello.
Hello. I can hear you. Oh, finally.
You're perfunctory.
I called you earlier. Remember, I could not hear you.
You're Dylan.
That's correct.
You're just claiming you can hear me because you want to talk about the demonstration again.
No, I couldn't hear you. I'm not joking. I'm calling you all the way from Montreal.
Ah.
And I didn't have, I was trying to hear you over a squawk box.
Ah, I see. So
Mama Mia.
Yeah, if Mike knew you were from Montreal, you would have switched it, right, Mike?
Yes. Well, I'm calling, I've got a friend in Toronto. I called him up and I woke him up. I said, why don't you put me on the squawk box so I can hear the radio?
Fantastic. Okay, what do you want to talk about? We heard all about the demonstration. Who's organizing it from your point?
Well, this is Lyndon. That's who we are. That's the one who's organizing it. So that's why I'm calling in.
I didn't know you from I advocated the gang. And
holy smokes.
Are you Jules? Or connected to him?
No. I'm not Gilles.
I was on CBC and I promoted the support for Lyndon as a political prisoner. This is causing a lot of trouble in Fabian Socialist Canada.
Yes, indeed. Well, you know, the thing is this, because actually people are saying that this war is going to be very, very short, you know.
I'm going to give this guy, he's a LaRouche. It was the first time we had a LaRouche on. Go ahead, buddy.
Yeah, well, here I am.
Okay.
So anyway, the thing is this, right now, actually, in the U.S. Army, you of course, people who are looking at this are saying this is completely insane because you have about half of the U.S. Army deployed to defend a tiny country of a couple million people. So people are saying, what the hell is going on? So actually, we know, the top intelligence people have just put together a report, which actually shows that, actually, the U.S. Army is in a very vulnerable position. If you look at munitions, the United States economy is so destroyed that it's not producing them. And actually, all the munitions in the Gulf are being taken from stockpiles in Germany. In other words, there's a cannibalization going on of existing stocks, right?
Yeah.
So what's going to happen if a shooting war starts out and you have no, you don't have adequate munitions? And this is just one example of the things that are going on. We also know right now that the water supply for the entire forces is coming from one desalination project, the Saudi Arabian desalination project, which has a high tower visible for miles and miles, which can be shot with one missile. That would be the end of the... You know, there would be the end of the water. Or we know that right now there's not adequate clothing for these people. That they're going into winter where there's going to be freezing rain, you know, that puts up to 4 inches of, you know, sleet and so forth all over the ground. These people don't have the clothing. And the factories that make it are not producing it. So all these things add up. And what it shows is that the logistics and the economy of the army is so disastrous that the United States would be inclined very early in the battle to use... you know, neutron bombs or limited nuclear capability. In other words, go all out, which is very, very insane. So this is very, very, you know, very, very dangerous. And so this is why we're doing this. So just called this together. And what he said is that, you're going to have to even be talking to whoever is against the war, even if they're, you know, if you think they're leftist, you know, screw it. You have to talk to them. Or if you think that they're right wing or whatever, screw it too. The point is that we've got to stop this because the United States is going to war to defend, you know, an idiotic, you know, system which is already collapsing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, so this is going on. So I was going to just say when I was calling before that I wanted to see if any of your listeners or perhaps you or anyone would like to come to this conference, because I'm helping organize this up here, you know, Montreal and so forth.
Well, what's the date of it?
It's going to be this weekend. It's going to be on the 15th and the 16th.
Where?
In Chicago.
And
we have a bus that's going to be going down through Toronto. So I was going to say, if anyone's interested, they should call the office here.
Yeah, what's your number?
Okay, it's a 514. It's in Montreal. It's up down.
So say that again, 514-385?
Now, that's the number in Montreal. But the thing is that, you know, basically this is, it's getting more and more stupid as you look at it. I mean, you can look at all the different wars that have broken out. You look at the Yom Kippur War, you look at the, you know, so forth. Right now, Hussein has built a 25-kilometer deep defensive line along most of the border of Saudi Arabia and Iraq. Now, this defensive line is so powerful that if you were to launch a frontal attack on it, you would probably see about 50,000 dead Americans. So the only way the United States can really attack Iraq would be by going far to the west, you know, and basically trying to attack through the west. But the problem is that their supply lines would get very long, and they would be very vulnerable. They would be having to you know, send these trucks and so forth way out west, and that would be make them vulnerable to attack. So what this means is that, you know, I mean, This is completely insane. Mr. Bush is talking about this new world order. What the hell is that, you know? This is something that, you know, people should think about.
Well, listen, so, you know, the report you're talking about, you're talking about the Bush's Gulf crisis, that latest report you and your friends have put out, right?
Oh, you read that?
Well, I was just reading about a half hour ago from page, I think it's in the 70s, a profile of the Anglo-American oil companies. We were focusing on Royal Dutch Shell, Sir Robert Clark, Michael Palliser, Sir David Orr, Lord Armstrong. That's thanks to you guys.
Oh, you mean you were reading that when I couldn't hear you?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Well, my friend told me when I couldn't hear you, he said, oh, my gosh, Dylan, they were just talking about you couldn't even hear them.
Like, yeah, we were supporting, you know, we're radicals here at CKLN. Not much of CKLN's audience supports. So, well, they may, but they don't tell us. They don't act it. And certainly, we welcome a dialogue with you guys just like you welcome dialogue with us.
All
and,
right.
As a matter of fact, I have sitting to my left a man who has put out a 10 Holy Office chart, which has Linen as the Holy Office of Logic. And he's working for me. My colleague, Bob Marshall, had done the greatest interview with Linen several in March 89 when he was doing all those interviews. So you have contacted a fantastic extension of the world right here.
Well, that's pretty good. One of my people just told me down there in Toronto. My goodness.
Yeah, well, we work with you. We also work with William Irwin Thompson and the Gnostics, so we're comprehensive.
All right, well, we don't like them very much, you know.
I know. That's why I just said it. But we like everybody and don't like anybody, so we'll shake hands and work with everybody because we're all pinks under electric conditions.
Okay, well, you know what? People should actually call here, though, because this is actually very urgent. I mean, I wouldn't be calling if this were not so real.
I know.
And so consistent. But this is, you know, we have until January 15th.
That's right.
And after that day, there it goes.
That's right.
We don't have something. What is warned now is that, I mean, actually had warned of a war long before anything even happened. You said that there was going for a war.
We've got to go, but I want to tell you, is one of the greatest minds of the 20th century. He's an incredible man.
I won't argue with you on that point, I don't think.
But he needs to read a little more of McLuhan's Laws of Media.
Well,
I recommend you could maybe reform the movement with a little bit of tetrad knowledge, but that's up to you. I don't mind if you reform or not, I still support you.
All right, well, tell all those closet supporters that are listening to the program to call here. I'll be here until 3 in the morning. And
okay.
Then they can call me again tomorrow after 9 a.m.
And you can call 416-650-4840 and leave a message on the response. That's,
yeah, you should interview again.
Yeah, we might. Might get Bob Marshall to do that.
See, we would get him to, he can't do as many interviews these days because you know that he's in a much more, you know, rigid, you know.
Confinement.
What's that?
Confinement.
That's right.
Yeah, he's eating confinement loaf constantly.
Yeah,
but I interviewed him Bob Marshall interviewed him when he was in the way station, whatever it was in Alexandria.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. We have actually a big thing because his wife just met with the president of Lithuania and so forth, and also the leaders of Solidarnosc and all kinds of things. All kinds of things going on.
That's right. Well, the LaRouche people are a very important international network, and the CBC is suffering because they never supported.
All right. All right. Well, tell those people to call us.
Okay, and then you call me back, 416-657-4040, and leave a message.
All right, we'll see you then.
Hope to hear you next week.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay. Direct propaganda from the... What do you think of that? Pretty soon we'll hear from Zappa and Dr. Beter people, you know, the Holy Offices.
That's too bad we didn't know he was from Montreal.
Then you could have done it.
No wonder he couldn't hear us. But yeah, I'm still having problems with the phone, so...
Well, sad kind of night for you, Mike.
Yeah.
Are we ready for any more?
We've got a couple of calls. We have 28 minutes. We want to leave... time for the music, of course.
28 minutes?
No, 20 minutes.
Okay, good. Okay.
Yeah, so including the music. Maybe, I don't know if I'm going to play at the phone. Just go to a call. So, hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Dublin?
Am I here?
Yeah.
You're here.
You're Dublin.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Listen, that was interesting what that last caller said about vulnerability, because that's what I had written down. The Americans are vulnerable because, figure it out, they got 500,000 frontline troops in positions, right?
Yeah, and you're also suspicious that Hussein has something up his sleeve.
Well, I said that.
Yeah.
But the thing is, if is maybe right to call attention to it, but only in the sense that the truth has to be told, because the vulnerability of the United States forces, like 550,000 troops in Vietnam gave them 50 maneuver battalions, 50 to 54, and a maneuver battalion is approximately 1,000 men on the move, right? But each one of them has got 9 men behind them passing up supplies. That's how it works. So when they got 400, whatever they got over there, 500,000 close to it, they've got most of their force there, you see? That's one thing. And they're awfully vulnerable because, of course, they could be hit by Russian nukes. And that'd be the end of that. And it really would. That's amazing, eh? And also, what I was thinking about it earlier today was that it was a very important token of trust, because Alvin Toffler was on this morning. He was talking about aftershocks and stuff. He was talking about civil disturbance, civil war in Russia, assassinations in China, in Peking, and then vast and important currents of change rushing through China and creating new centers comparable to Japan and so on and so forth. But the thing is, the Shepherd Nazi, the Russian ambassador, was saying today, no civil war in Russia. You see? So the picture it paints for me is this. Saddam Hussein wants to fight a ground war, right? He wants to fight it against NATO forces. Before he's finished, he might be fighting it against Russian forces, too. It's not even going to go on that long. Like that last caller said, they're dug in 25 kilometers deep, and the Americans will have to go around them. What a joke. You just do pinpoint bombing all around them, and they don't get any food or water. You don't even have to fight them if they're stupid enough to rely on that kind of a tactic, right? It's a desert war with satellites overhead, and there's no freezing rain out there in the winter, just clear skies for the satellite eyes to look down. So you see, I think that the vulnerability of those exposed forces tells me two things. They put them out there in a way to show the Russians they can trust them. If the Russians are going to have domestic problems...
Who put them out there? You saying they is the Iraqis or the Americans?
Well, it's become a world thing.
What did that they refer to, just to follow what you're
well,
saying?
Well, in effect, it's the Western Alliance combined command, right?
Yeah, they put their people there.
They pull the forces out of Europe. This emphasizes the disarmament process that's going on there right now. It emphasizes it. It emphasizes the fact that there's no threat to Russia. And
yeah.
Russia frees Russia up to deal with its domestic difficulties, which the Russians are probably listening to this right now, right?
Yeah.
I mean, even the ordinary Russians, I'm not talking about the KGB or anything like that. So they're going to tweak to what's happening a lot faster than we expect, just like they have done so far. Look at they got caught with their pants down, didn't they? They want to sue this Canadian citizen who ran for the presidency of Poland for slander.
Yeah, they said he was KGB, and would that mean that Peter was right, that the Bolshevik entity was in English Canada?
Not really.
Comes out of Mississauga.
Not really. I see the Poles as super intelligent, extremely hard-working group of people. That's what their culture spells, and that's what it tells, right? The Russians used them as an economic resource for 20, 30 years. They're very quick studies. They're very hard-working. They've always had brilliant mathematicians, musicians. There's no problem with their school system. Never has been. So now what have you got happening today? They're an economic basket case. They've got Russians coming across their border, you know, looking like it's like fleeing to the West. At the same time, they're so stuck in the mud. Like, what did we say over here? We said, hey, LBJ, how many kids did you kill today, right? Those are ugly words. That's what we deal with in politics, ugly words. We're free to use them. But they want to sue this guy for what? Calling Walesa a thief, calling the other guy a thief, that's just, see what I mean? Like, the pace of change is so fast that I'm saying that even the clever Poles are caught with their pants down.
Okay, now back to the Saudi Arabian front line. What were you trying to say there? I don't get what your point is, if there was
My point is that Saddam Hussein will lose very quickly, and he has to lose quickly because the Americans, it's a balancing act.
So
on the one hand,
would disagree with the LaRouche that it would get to the nuclear warhead level.
Well, I accept the good faith of the last caller, but I don't believe that he... I want to hear what he's got to say. I don't believe that he...
said what said.
That's right. He said that was behind something that was going to happen. That I might believe. I mean, why should I doubt it? But he didn't quote. He goes into a lot of detail.
Yeah.
No, I'm saying that on the one hand, they're extremely exposed. You can't put 60% of your frontline troops in one place.
So what does that mean? If they're extremely exposed, that means that something else is intended?
No, it means that if they act, they're going to act exceedingly quickly and exceedingly effectively. They have to. Their own domestic situation won't allow anything else. But what I think they'll establish is the triumph if that happens, which I don't think is necessary yet.
Well, I intend the war to go from 3 to 6 weeks. That's all.
Well, that's the kind of thing I'm saying. Yeah. It just depends. If you want to starve them out by simply cutting their supply lines and making sure that they stay cut, it probably would take a few weeks to starve them out, you see?
Okay, Dub, we've got your point. Thank you.
Yeah, okay, that was a good call about the owl, too.
Yeah, if you want to mention anything else, call back. We got any other callers, Mike? Okay, have you got anything else to say about the owl? I mean, you're the one who brought up the Innes quote.
I like what that guy did with it.
Yeah.
The image, it still comes across as a false owl to me, right?
Yeah.
But he emphasized the nature of the owl, and he's quite correct. I never thought about that binocular vision thing. But it's like this. You were saying that when an empire explodes, right, these little currents of creativity and knowledge and life go sputtering out of it, right?
No, the knowledge increases as the it blossoms in
blossoms,
its...
Blossoms, yeah. It goes out like a lifeline.
Yeah.
Like a living spring of creativity.
It expands, and the scholars that the empire produced and blossom at the end of the empire move on to the next empire.
Well, that's the idea. That's what Innes was saying, the genius of Greece went dip and jumped into Europe, where then you got changed for a few hundred years. But what I mean is this. We're not exploding right now. See what I mean?
Yeah.
You wanted to know, is the American empire going to... Are we at the explosion stage where we're actually dying? And I think that's a complete misreading. Look, they had Dan Quayle today saying that that's it for the space shuttle. If they can't control the toilets, they're going to have to find a better way to fly. They had Dan Quayle saying that. You know, it's amazing. The fact that people didn't laugh at him, you know, and comment on how apt it was that they called in Dan Quayle when they had a plugged toilet, right? This just goes to show how everybody's energy is really focused somewhere else. Like that money, the CBC thing, right? All they're doing there is freeing up some hundreds of millions of dollars to accommodate change if it occurs in Quebec or whatever other mystery 1991 holds in store for us, right? That money is not being saved. That's just money that they're grabbing right now because they instinctively sense that they're going to have to revamp their operation in the near future. And these people think in terms of control. They don't do media ecology. They're just a bunch of gut instinct politicians.
Paranoids. Listen to this, Dub. I'm going to switch it over. I want you, you're a regular reader of Scientific American. I'm going to give a hint of new progresses in making metals. Now, listen to this. I'm explaining how the material used by the Axis in their UFOs. Now, this is why they can do what they do. The material from which these UFOs are made is that which would be best described as a collapsed metal. There's been talk about other situations than the Axis about collapsed metal, but collapsed metal is...
Neutronium.
No. Collapsed metal is what it is. Now, here's what the collapsed metal comes from. It is metal that has its density increased. Its density, that is the space between the atoms and the molecules, has been decreased, and this has been done by decreasing the pull between each atom. Not increasing, but decreasing.
The problem with that, Bob.
Therefore, the metal must clutch itself closer. And that is the clue to futuristic metal, which our scientists are going to have to deal with. And that's a hint to them right now.
Well, let me comment on that.
Okay.
If the only thing is increasing the density, then you're going to get something heavier than lead, heavier than gold, so on and so forth. Weight becomes a huge factor. And if you're going to have UFOs flitting around at 30,000 miles an hour, it's counterintuitive. You have to assume that they've also got anti-gravity, they've got a unified field theory, and they've got a method of hooking into the gravitic field, right?
Well, just hold it there. Let me explain their anti-gravity. Now, in the inside of the UFO, where we just talked about the metal that it's made of, realize that the mechanism is best described as that which is not anti-gravity. It does not push against gravity. It does not pull against gravity. It does not recognize gravity. It is neither plus nor minus. It is neutral. Therefore, the power system of these UFOs that we're seeing making the crop circles, the power system has yet another aspect, and that is that which would be termed drift engines. You see, the universe drifts. If you make yourself stationary in a moving universe, then you will indeed move in relationship with everything else.
That's right. You just point yourself where you want to go.
Right. Now, in that which is termed close quarter work in these UFOs, certain other engines are used, and these do here aid in the recognition of gravity, that which go between universes, then unrecognizes time, then does recognize stop. Therefore, time plus stop equals speed, and where time has been changed and where drift has been established plus force, one can stop, let the universe turn, and it does not matter if you go through the entire stellar solar system, it takes no more time. That is how the mothership itself is powered.
This is not Scientific American.
And of course not. No, this is what the Scientific American is going to have to realize. Now, what your first response about this, trying to spell out your understanding of the collapsed metal, was a litany of the Scientific American's response.
Well, I suppose you're right in a way, but the thing is, if you don't know anything, you have to rely on your own common sense, and that's a situation I always find myself in, right?
Well, is it common sense that the space between the atoms and molecules...
Okay.
It decreased?
Well, there's two ways you can do it, right? First of all, if you make the space between less, that's correct, you're increasing density, but nobody said anything about thickness. I mean, if the whole skin was only an angstrom unit thick... See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's so skinny. We don't even have any physical objects that are even remotely similar to something that skinny. So it could be awful heavy if you didn't have very much of it.
Now, they are skinny. Now, listen to this.
What I mean is that the shell of that ship is actually a lot thinner than a bubble that you blow in soap.
Yeah, let me describe the mothership to you. The UFO shape of these UFOs that the Exus use is they can move through an atmosphere at that shape. And can be stored as one would stack dishes or saucers. And that long tubular shape of the mothership that is formed by the stacking of these UFOs, or airfoils, is then the basic shape of that which is termed the mothership. This means that these UFOs, even though they have the capability of transforming time and distance, that invariably those airfoils, those UFOs, will make a turn one way, a turn the other, then will be then no longer caught within speed-time state.
There's mathematics involved in what the guy's saying there that is... beyond my easy grasp, you know. He's obviously talking about multi-dimensions. It's easy to get the thing about if the universe is moving, if you can find a profound way to make yourself stand still. In other words, get outside the grip of the ordinary universal forces which grip you.
But you see how they're thin.
Pardon?
You see that they're thin.
Well, I say that's one possibility. The other possibility, that's if you're going to make it increasing density, then you have to go to thinness unless you're going to have a weight. But the other, because you see, the problem with weight is you start talking mathematics, but you can end up with a black hole. If you start pushing matter as closely together, as closely packed as it can be packed, then what you've got is a black hole which by its own gravity sucks in every object that comes near it. And it just seems like something that would get difficult to handle if it were pushed to an extreme. Now, the other way, you said Scientific American, and I think the other way would be the way they were writing about composite materials in a recent issue. And they emphasized the actual geometry of structure. You know, the way they use carbon fibers in composite. They line them up, they weave them together, they make shapes, and they...
Okay, Dub, we got to go.
All right.
We've just had your response to the description, and you're the best one to respond to the description of how metals are made on the UFOs.
Just two quick points, Bob.
Okay.
One is, we are imploding towards a point of meeting, right? And all this political events is the explosion part is going to be a multinational, probably a planetary-wide event, though it won't include the whole planet.
Yeah.
And that's one thing. Now, in terms of that, I see your previous caller's image of the owl as a short-term hunter. Very, very good. That these are forces on the outside, and you see... This business of Laura Palmer does have the shape of a tragedy because there's no explanation for it. As you said, the young girl was talking about she wanted to get free or elevate herself to a higher plane, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
What happened to her? A creature from the outside with a false face, like a hunting owl, just came in and ripped her life right out of life. See, now those are the facts of tragedy, and tragedy is not explainable. Otherwise, it would not be tragedy. The whole thing about... The thing that makes a tragedy is the fact that it is just sad and it's not explainable, and the person has to be seen as a cosmic victim. So that's, and I want to think more about that, but that was good about the owl. Now, the other thing is, that very first caller, the one who wanted to know about DNA, and whether he...
Duplicating.
He wanted to be duplicated so he could share some of his own work with himself. Well, I don't know how he's going to take this, but we do have that, as you know, Bob, we do have that facility, and when a person gives permission, it's, well, you know this, It's done automatically, eh? So for the caller's information, he has been duplicated as an electronic memory, but he won't be able to share that with himself because there's a work contract involved. And for the next 30 years, that electronic clone is going to be out there with the Klingons in the interstellar space, fighting off an element of the dark shift, which we haven't had time to discuss today, but which is also very relevant to what's going on. So I think if other listeners want to be duplicated, and the Klingons are good people to fight, but you'll have to do that to a duty up there, and there's no contact. So some of them will be using the like that's what I wanted to say about that. I hope that was good.
Okay, thanks, Deb. It was good. Okay, I'll throw my bit in about James B.'s question about duplication, unless there's a caller. What's the time? We got 10 minutes?
What's
the actual time?
We have 5 minutes.
Till 5 to 2.
It's 5 to 2 right now.
Oh, we got to get him on. Okay. So basically, just to wrap up, I'd say that one is duplicated in the man-made nature by any media used. If you write a book, if you're in a movie, if you're on a record, if you're on a microphone, you're duplicating yourself. James B. would, I guess, assume want to duplicate himself using the first nature. That's tricky. We'll have to get into that next show, and we still got to talk about David Ayer's question about sensory closure versus spirituality. Got to get to that. But this show is going to merge into next week.
Yeah.
We'll just take a recess. So Kent's waiting with Sherman Skolnick and...
I have it set up.
We got the him. Yeah, so it's a question whether you want to duplicate yourself from the first nature level or the second nature, which is media, man-made inventions. That's the moral dilemma. It gets tricky when you fool around and duplicate yourself on God's level. So that's my warning to James B.
Okay.
All right, I wouldn't recommend it. I'd recommend duplicate yourself like he does in the music business. All right, no callers, right?
No, that's it for tonight. Sorry, there were a few callers who were, we were waiting. Sorry, we couldn't get to tonight. So we'll see you in 1 week instead of 2 weeks.
Yeah, we'll see you next Wednesday.
We'll continue. Subgenius Christmas special.
Thanks to all the callers.
The Night Owl.
Well, this is Not Daddy Cool. This is your host, Greg Duffel. This is the International Connection, heard every Sunday at 8:30 a.m. And on the line with me right now is Mr. Bob Dobbs. Bob?
Hey, Greg. It was so awesome listening to that show. You know, can I say, we're going to take calls, right?
Sure, we can take calls if you wish. The phone number, if you wish to call in, is 416-595-1655. This is the present day, I should add. That was December either 12th or 13th, 1990, that you heard that the whole program. Some of it may have seemed contemporaneous to you, but it wasn't. It was fully almost 16 years ago. So, but we now have Bob here on the line, live, in the year 2006. So, Bob, thoughts about the show while we wait callers, if they choose to phone in, at 416-595-1655.
I think it's awesome you're replaying these shows. They're so strong. I'm amazed at myself. 3 points. That Finnegan's Wake phrase that came up on the show, Lost in the Bush, and the theme of the show was we were in a post-information environment. Now, that quote, Lost in the bush is the information environment, and so when we have an actual post-information scenario politically since 2000, the president is Bush. It's amazing. And Bush is someone they're all lost in because they think he's an information image, but he's post-information. So he put up a fake name to distract everybody to refer to the previous environment of information overload,
look
which is Bushland. Very interesting.
Sounding
second
so good.
Point. LaRouche was wrong, and I was right. I said the war would last 3 to 6 weeks. I was right. LaRouche talked about nuclear war and all that stuff. Right?
That's right.
If that was LaRouche, I don't know who it was. He kept bleeping it, so that was great. And then the third point is I met with Jack Sarfatti this week on Monday, I think it was. And he is a tremendous post-quantum physicist, very talented man. And he was born in 1939, so he's 68, I guess, 67. Mm-hmm. Anyways, he's designing in what he's created called post-quantum physics. He's trying to design and explain... In traditional physics terms, with new updates, how UFOs happen, how remote viewing happens. Well, my gosh, you play this excerpt today, 6 days later, and I'm explaining how UFOs made. I got to write this down when I hear the replay and call Jack. Well, I'm going to see him in October when he comes back from New York and tell him how the UFOs made, because he's trying to figure it out. I already had the information 16 years ago.
If anybody wants a written encapsulation of this week's show, I happen to have it. I've done it myself.
Years of community broadcasting. This is CKLN.
Yes.
My chemical brain, nobody's chemical body brain can absorb all this.
No.
I got all this stuff I'm doing that you're replaying. I don't even remember doing all this stuff.
I know.
It's incredible. This is my TV body,
so
my audio body.
If anybody does want it, they can write to me at internationalconnection@rogers.com. And if you are interested in hearing any of the old Bob shows, if this was of any interest to you, they are available by going to our website at www.ckln.fm/tilde International Connection. Now, what a tilde is, I'm not even going to explain it. If you don't know, just go to Google. CKLN International Connection, you'll find our site, and there's a cornucopia of material there on the previous shows page that you can check out. You can even click on some of it and listen to old shows. We don't archive them. We actually, some of Bob's cult are archiving them, and other stuff is available on the web, and we link to that, just so that you know. And the phone number here is 416-595-1655 for those of you who wish to dialogue with Bob.
So, we got no calls yet. This sounds
no,
like talking
not.
To Mike.
No, yeah.
No calls yet, Greg,
no,
right?
No, none.
Okay, what do you want to say? Can you talk about why that was bleeped, or that can't be talked about?
Well, I think it's we have to look at it as a safety issue. You know how everybody in the media talks about being safe?
Embedded.
Now the media has to be safe itself.
Yes, yes.
So we did a preemptive strike. I did. What I did was I went and reviewed the whole program. I wrote everything down. And then after I wrote it all down, I thought, okay, now I got to be safe here at CKLN. So the way to be safe from those the evildoers. The evildoers, you've got to go in and cut out anything that might disturb them if they hear, like a name or...
Yeah, like Reverend Stang. We don't want to disturb Stang and the stupid subgenius of the American branch.
Right. So I look at it that way. It's just being safe.
That's media quality. It's kind of pressured, but that's studying the form and its effects and anticipating. That's what the polls do, the pollster guys do. Interesting that Dublin is so smart. I love to get in touch with him. He always wanted copies of these shows. He told me about 10 years ago to play for his daughter to show what he could say and do.
Yeah.
And we need to find Dublin if he's still alive.
Well, we found Edward. Edward calls in.
Yeah.
Usually not when you're running one of these shows or when we're running one of these shows. He'll phone me sort of halfway through the month because these shows are run about a month apart. And... He does cab driving by night, and we do have a call. Hold on, CKLN 88.1. You're on the air with Bob. No, they didn't want to be on the air with Bob.
You know, Edward is partly the reason we have these tapes. He was the one who taped this stuff for the Doctors for Bob Institute. Which
No. Wait a minute. The reason that these tapes exist is because I taped them.
Now, Edward, I've got the Edward
tapes. You're hoarding the Edward tapes. Let's get it straight. You're hoarding the Edward tapes. That luckily there was a second person that was recording. That happened to be me, and that's why these tapes exist and survive. No one had the foresight at CKLN at the time, certainly, to even keep anything. Especially this, but there were people out there, Edward and me, and maybe even other people who have
the
copies.
Perry
of
Perry guy, remember Perry?
Perry, I'd love to get the Perry collection, but that's being hoarded by another person who doesn't want to let any of it out. Who we all know, but and maybe Bob, you could intervene with that.
I don't know what time I'm in because I thought that were, I don't know why I'm thinking they were Edward's tapes. I forgot. You're the genius who were producing
right.
these ones.
Okay, here we go. CKLN 88.1. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going?
Very well, thank you. You're on the air, CKLN, with Bob.
Yeah, I wanted to talk to Bob about the tapes.
Okay, now before we go any further, caller, if you could turn down your radio, we are in delay.
Is the option. Mike, we had to turn them up in those days.
Yeah, I would like you just to turn off your radio, then. Okay, good? Okay, what's your question? Sorry, go ahead.
My question is for Bob this morning.
Yes.
And I wanted to know if he...
We all know, but maybe Bob, you could intervene with that.
I don't know what time I'm in because I thought
that was an excellent call.
Yeah, who's that? That guy sounded familiar. He sounded like the little kid he used to call in, 15, 16 years ago. He came down one day. He was a little short guy, 5'2", and he wanted a copy of Alternative 3, which I gave him, an extra copy. But what did you hear? Did you hear what the tape said he just played?
I think he was just playing the delay of what we were just saying.
Oh, yeah. That's all right.
I thought it was that was an excellent call.
Very good.
Anybody else want to phone in with something as good or better than that? We're game.
416-595-1655.
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah.
I want to say that the very first caller, I think, was James B. on the phone messages, right?
Yes. Isn't that an interesting intersection with that and later on Bob Dobb's life, right?
Yeah, like the synchronicity or the xenocrity or something. James B., who I only knew a little bit, Bob Marshall knew him better, and he liked Bob Marshall's show and gave him an award, the Turkey Award. But James B. ended up meeting Nelson Thal, who was Tom Rich calling in there several times on the show today, and they teamed up with me to do the show on Mojo. James B., what was he called? Deep Throat.
Yeah, he was. It struck me that he was just as boring and confused in that show as he was in the call that he made to your answering machine.
That's right. He's narcissistic. He admits he's narcissistic. Mm-hmm. He's so involved himself. He wants to replicate himself. He was very narcissistic on the Mojo show. That's the role he plays. He's locally very prominent in the After Hours Club scene in Toronto. It's always been that.
Yes. Sometimes he gets on Bravo News.
Yes. Now, the amazing xenocrity there is that Tom Rich and James B. don't know each other at that point, but they're on the same show, and they're going to work together. I mean, that is Bob's psychic ability, environmentally speaking.
Yes.
Any more callers, instant replays?
No, as soon as I see callers, the people are putting down... people are putting down books in front of the telephone where it rings, and I can't see it, but I move them aside, and everything's going on. There's just utter chaos here usually, but... 416-595-1655. These are the waning moments that you can get in touch and speak directly with J.R. Bob Dobbs.
Like, what about Heather? I mean, you visited Heather. Heather should be calling in.
Oh, I can't force them to go out. Do you want me to go out and I could leave you on the air right now.
I mentioned the Rothschilds in that show.
You did?
British Petroleum was a board member of N.M. Rothschild.
You're on the air with Bob Dobbs.
Good morning.
Friend of Mr. Rothschild.
Okay, yes, go ahead.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Fine.
This is me, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Hi, Arnold.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Arnold.
We just get to know you.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Well, Arnold, I'm very acquainted with your circle, your kitchen cabinet. I'm in California a lot.
We have actually the next program that we have on is a program, a Spanish-speaking program, and you've recently had some, you made some comments about Latin people, which people took offense to, didn't they, Arnold?
Yes.
What is your reaction to people, what they said? How do you respond to this?
You Palix retrieval of the post-Bush, post-information environment. Not mm-hmm. post-President Bush himself, but post his image.
Right.
Remember, he's a guy who doesn't engage in any information.
Hold
so Arnold's a perfect complement to that.
Let's hear what Arnold has to say. Arnold? Yes, Arnold?
Yes.
What did you have to say?
Monosyllable.
To meet you.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Arnold. Arnold, I don't know. I got rid of him. He really wasn't at his peak form there, I didn't think.
He says a few more words on other shows.
Yeah, yeah. He's much more talkative.
Well, I controlled him by naming him, describing him accurately how he's a figure for a certain ground. And when you do that, that numbs him.
Maybe he's doing some media ecology himself there. Finally.
Yes, yes, yeah. Yes. Though that's interesting. Lack of information, the grunts from the Bush administration, the grunts of his image is an example of not using too much information.
Right.
Trying to help people out of the Bush. It's amazing what the corporate language and just our what human nature has made through second nature. You know, what we've invented, the laws, the order in it, the patterns of recognition, it's just tremendous. This is how you get slack. Not the slack that Doug Stang and Robert Rex or anybody else who aligns himself with the silly Church of Subgenius American branch. I mean, those are losers.
Oh,
and they're totally frightened of me.
Well, let me just plug that, actually. You can hear the alternate, the enemy, as Bob puts it. You can hear it at 2 a.m. on tonight, overnight at 2 o'clock. That is run on Idio Audio, and you can hear the other church.
What's his name? Dave Gardner?
David Bochner.
Bochner.
David Bochner is a host here at CKLN, and he runs basically either the anti-Bob, or this is the anti-Bob, or he's the anti-Bob. But anyway, it's more Bob stuff is run. It's just different Bob. And
yeah. And the point is, like we did in the old show, and you're good at this, Greg, we promote the enemy. We need the enemy to exaggerate
of
ourselves.
Course, we must. I don't consider David Bochner an enemy. But,
no, he's a good friend of mine. I never met him. I like him
too.
He's at CKLN.
Well, anyway, Bob, we must go. The next show is in, and I want to get their show started on time. So it's
great
time
work,
to go.
Greg. Great work.
Thank
it's tremendous
you.
Hearing this stuff. It is relevant.
All right, very good.
Okay, talk to you later.
Bye, Bob.
Bye.